Hey, hey, welcome to the Healthful Woman Podcast, the fastest growing podcast in women's health. Today's Monday, April 15th, 2024. This week and next week, you are in for a real treat as you're going to hear the amazing birth story of Miriam Goldman, who delivered her third child with our practice in 2023. As you got from the title of the podcast, Miriam was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer during her pregnancy. Thank God she and her baby are doing well, and she came in on the day her baby turned 9 months to share her incredible story with all of us. Thank you to Miriam for agreeing to share her story, for coming to my office, and for being such an incredible guest. All right, a few reminders. Reminder, anyone listening on Apple or Spotify, it would be awesome if you could rate this podcast, preferably with 5 stars. Today's podcast is certainly 5 stars. Please do leave comments and suggestions. I read them all. If you have any questions for our mailbag podcast, please send them in. You can email us directly at hw@healthfulwoman.com or go to our website, www.healthfulwoman.com, and click on the link that says send us your questions. Please remember, these questions are for mailbag podcasts, not personal medical advice that you need answered quickly. If you have such questions, ask your doctor. All right, my book with Emily Oster, The Unexpected, is being released in a few weeks. Very exciting. If you would like to pre-order the book, we have links on our websites. As I announced last week, we do have a few book signings coming up on May 22nd at 7 p.m. at the JCC on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. There's going to be an event and book signing. It's going to be a conversation with Emily and me, followed by a book signing. If you go to their website for the JCC, it might say a conversation with Emily Oster, but I'll be there too. I think they're going to change that at some point. So feel free to sign up for that. If you sign up, I'm pretty sure the admission fee comes with a copy of the book, so you won't have to also pre-order the book. You can check their website for more details. There's also going to be an event and book signing at Politics and Prose Bookstore in Washington, D.C. in May as well. I will pass along those details when I get them. Finally, thanks to all of you who sent in their well wishes to my wife, Michal, on her recovering from donating a kidney. She is recovering well and really appreciates all the love and support. All right, thanks for listening. Enjoy part one of Miriam's story. See y'all next week for part two. Welcome to today's episode of Healthful Woman, a podcast designed to explore topics in women's health at all stages of life. I am your host, Dr. Nathan Fox, an OBGYN and maternal fetal medicine specialist practicing in New York City. At Healthful Woman, I speak with leaders in the field to help you learn more about women's health, pregnancy, and wellness. All right, Miriam Goldman. Miriam, welcome to the podcast. It's so nice to see you. So nice to have you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
This is terrific. When you came in today, I was all confused because I was like, wait, you're supposed to be here at 2 o'clock. You're like, no, 1 o'clock. Here's the email. You said 1 o'clock. And then I got confused and I realized, because I thought today was Tuesday when in fact today's Monday. And I said, this is what you have to look forward to as you get older, where you just don't know what the hell day it is.
Welcome to the week.
Yeah. So, but it's all good. But you're here. We're in person, which is really a delight for me because a lot of people do it remotely, but you live local, you work in the city at Mount Sinai, and here we are face to face. Good. How you doing today?
Good. I just felt this was a really intense story. So this is a good person to face-to-face type of story.
It is an intense story. It is better face-to-face. Thank God it sort of ends well. And so that's good, but we're going to get into some pretty deep stuff, I guess. So I guess just for our listeners, give us a sense of, you know, who you are, where you're from, what do you do, and how did you come to volunteer your story?
Sure. So my name is Miriam. I live in New Jersey, married with a family there, from New Jersey, moved back to the same town after I had kids. Mm-hmm. So my parents were in the same town as me. I work in New York City at Mount Sinai as a hospital social worker. I've been doing that for 11 years and the inpatient side. So I've kind of been on the provider side for over 10 years now, which kind of like plays into this. And I was kind of just listening to your podcast, and I was just, after my 6-month mark, I was like, I'm ready. I'm ready to share my story. I'm processed it enough, and I'm ready to hopefully reach out to anyone else who's gone through this and that they could know that it was done, know that there are people that have done there, and just take strength from anything they hear from today.
That's amazing. Now, you left out one important piece here, which is the toast.
Oh my God, I love the toast. I actually am a patient in your practice. And then I also heard you on the toast because I love the toast. And then I kind of, it all combined from there.
Right. Good morning, millennials.
Yes, yeah. I'm a millennial.
God bless you. All right. So great. And I guess we're going to be talking mostly about your pregnancy from last year. I guess we're 2024. So you said your baby's 9 months old now?
9 months old today.
Amazing. But let's go into your first two births just to get a sort of a flavor of what your reproductive career was like from the outset. So tell us about your first pregnancy, first delivery.
Sure. So I have a 6.5-year-old son now. Mm-hmm. He's my oldest. Got pregnant a few months after trying. Total normal pregnancy, nausea, but nothing like crazy and no complications. Super easy. Had him 2 days past his due date. And it was really a vaginal delivery. There was really no, like, I was totally normal. He was totally normal. There was super low anxiety the whole time. And that was kind of it.
And you delivered in the city at that time. Were you living in the city?
I was living in Queens, but working in the city. So I delivered in Lenox Hill because I thought it was kind of in between both.
Right in between. Yeah. Perfect. All right. So that went well. Things are going good. You're a new mom. And you decide to do it again.
3 years later. I needed time to process. 3 years later.
Good time.
I'm like, let's try for another one. Tried again. Took a little bit longer. But we were like, this is okay. Got pregnant. And by now I lived in New Jersey. So I switched to Englewood Hospital.
Sure. Know it well.
Hospital. Get my own room there. Super easy pregnancy. It was during COVID though. So that made things a little complicated because I was working in a hospital. Always worked through it. But then when I was ready to give birth, I didn't have COVID. My husband didn't have COVID. It was the easiest labor I've ever had. Right.
So this is 2020.
Yes.
What month?
July.
Oh, so this is really like in the throes of COVID.
Right.
Was this right? This must have been right after the time when people thought they'd have to deliver alone. That was more, I think, April.
That was like March, April.
Yeah.
This was July. So my husband was there, but we did have to wear masks during delivery.
It's annoying.
Well, I learned it when I was actually pushing because I didn't care.
And also it was a time of no visitors.
No visitors except my husband, but he can only leave once.
Right.
So he had to stay with me, left just to like get the car seat. And then that was it. And then we left the hospital.
Wow. That was a very stressful time. All right.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Post-COVID or in COVID, pre-vaccine. That summer, it got a little calmer later when the rates dropped, but that was still pretty harrowing.
Right. And more stressful because I had a 2.5-year-old with no childcare. And I was like, what am I going to do with him? So that made it more stressful, but we got through it.
Fair. All right. So you have two kids, you're doing well, you're living in Jersey, and now you decide we're going for number three.
Yes.
We love people like you. So God bless.
Well, all right. Really wanted to try for a girl, but we got a boy anyway, and that's okay.
Okay.
So we're like, let's go for number three.
Okay.
Got pregnant really like right away, no issues. And I was like, great, this is going to be super easy. So I go for my 8-week appointment, which is kind of the first one that you get like verified, like you're pregnant. They find the heartbeat and we're like, okay, this is it. And you do your like a million vials of blood.
Right.
I was ready for that.
Right.
I do that and I get a call and everything looks fine. Great. Yeah. I get a call.
And you're a low risk, young, healthy, what we call para two prior babies. You're like the best of the best, the lowest of the lowest risk that anyone could have.
Right. Thank I'm God. Also under 35 still. And I personally have very low anxiety. So I was like totally not nervous. I was like, oh, this is easy. I can do this. I get a call a few days later from the OB that something in my lab work didn't look good. He said, your platelets are extremely low. I am not an expertise in blood work.
Right.
You need to follow up with a hematologist.
Right.
I said, okay, like, what can it mean? He's like, I genuinely have no idea, but they were like critical low. So you need to follow up.
Did you get the sense at the time? Obviously, they don't really know. Did you get the sense of time to like, I don't know, but it's bad or I don't know, but I don't know?
So I was having like severe exhaustion and I brought up to all the doctors like, you're pregnant, you have two kids, like you work full time. So I was like, maybe this is why I'm tired. And it like won't be a problem. Like I didn't really think it was a problem. I was just like, maybe this will solve this exhaustion. Right. I was exhausted. Right.
Was your blood count also very low or just your platelets?
They were like a little low, but nothing like
nothing
red
crazy.
Flag. Like when the lab work comes back, this was in the reds. And I'm like, and I work in healthcare. So I'm like, reds are not good.
Right.
Of course, the hematologist couldn't see me for four weeks later or something. So I'm like, okay, we'll just keep going on. I think at like 12 weeks, I had my hematologist appointment. Of course, they take more blood work. The numbers keep dropping. She could not figure out what it was. So I spent about 4 weeks going 2 times a week to give blood work. She did every test in the book. We couldn't figure it out. And my numbers just kept dropping. And now all my numbers just were dropping and dropping and dropping. At the same time, so now I'm like 12, 13 weeks pregnant. I go back to my OB for my NI TP.
PT, yeah.
PT to test for like the chromosome issues, the Down syndromes, which I don't know if everyone does, but all Jewish women right. do. So I was right. like, okay, I've had these before. I'm not surprised. We're at like 14 weeks now. I get a call from my OB that the NIPT
Bingo.
Came back abnormal, but he didn't really explain what that meant. So I kind of, and I should have looking back asked more, I kind of understood that it was like this, the like lab work, the specimen was like tampered on the way. Cause I guess they sent it to California in this like specialized lab. He's like, it's not a big deal. Like, we're not really sure like why it was like dirty. We'll just do another one. So I come back in. Meanwhile, at this time I'm giving like twice a week blood at the hematologist. I'm going back to the OB. I literally just kept giving blood and we send it out again to the lab. I'm still going to the hematologist at this. So then the second NIPT comes back and he basically calls me and explains that they found abnormal DNA, which of course is why they can't even right. test for all these like chromosome issues because the DNA is abnormal. And I was like, what does that mean? And he's like, honestly, we don't know. We don't know if the abnormal DNA is on you right. or on the baby.
Right. So just to pause for our listeners, when we do the NIPT test, essentially it's a blood test on the mother. And in the mother's blood, there's always free pieces of DNA, FRE, free pieces of DNA. Most of it, let's say 95% is the mother's. 5% comes from the baby through the placenta. And so they use it to sort of say, okay, is the baby a boy or a girl, right? Because if there's Y chromosome floating around in your blood, presumably you're having a boy. And if there's no Y chromosome, presumably you're having a girl. Or if there's extra 21 chromosome, presumably the baby has an increased risk of Down syndrome. And if there's not, so be it. But every now and again, they find something abnormal, but it's not from the baby, right? Because the assumption is the mother's DNA is all normal. So anything that's unusual is from the baby. But every now and again, there's a mother who has an unusual chromosome. Either she has herself some sort of chromosomal abnormality or something else that we'll get into. And so that's sort of they're trying to sort out what is this thing that we're finding? Is it mother or baby? And it was obviously not a typical finding. Mm-hmm. It was something that they have to sort of dig into.
Right. So he left me with the impression that they believe it's the mother is the problem, mm-hmm. but kind of just like left me and said, I'll get a follow-up call in a day or so.
Right.
And the reason that is because the lab in California is associated with the NIH, which is the National Institute of Health in like the right. government's
right.
health system.
And they need to do a deep dive.
And they have a study that this lab knew about that if there's abnormal DNA in the mother, they suspect metastatic cancer in the mother.
Right. Crazy.
Right. And Crazy. He tells me this and I'm floored. I'm yeah. like, I don't know what you mean. I'm young. I go on the Peloton. I eat right. salads. Like, how could I have metastatic cancer?
Yeah.
So he's like, the NIH will call you and they'll kind of go over this.
Right. This is your OB telling you or the lab telling you?
It was like the OB and then a little bit the lab, but no yeah. one really would share anything.
Yeah. No, there is. It is known that every now and again, this NIPT test will pick up cancer in the mother. It's rare because cancer in the mother is rare to begin with, but it sometimes happens that the way you find out is only because of this blood test. Now, obviously, you were having other things going on at the time, your low blood counts, you're not feeling well, you're being followed by hematologist, is trying to sort it out. But this is sort of like a red flag on a red flag,
right.
so to speak.
Right.
Yeah.
So the NIH, the genetic counselor
did you put it together at the time? I'm being followed by hematologist for this weird blood stuff
no.
and this. Okay, that's fine.
So when the NIH called, they said that it's also usually a solid tumor cancer.
Right.
And I was like, I would know.
Right.
I could feel. I just was like, I would know.
Right.
There's no way.
Right.
I'm also all friends with doctors and PAs right. at work.
And you I'm work like, in a hospital. Yeah.
They're talking to me every day. I'm like, look at my blood work. And I have blood work for twice a week every day. So yeah. I'm like, there's no way. So basically the NIH is like, if you're okay, you can come down to Maryland and do all this tests to see what it is.
Right.
So I scheduled that for like a few weeks in a row because that was their first availability. Meanwhile, with the hematologist, she still can't figure out what's going on. So she says, let's do a bone marrow biopsy.
That's unpleasant.
But like on the spot.
Yeah.
It's like Thursday morning and I'm like, okay, I'm here for my 8 o'clock appointment. I'll go to work. She's like, let's do one right now.
Mm.
And I'm like, I think I should call my husband because like I know what this implies.
Right.
But she's like, let's just do it. I'm available. It's a holiday weekend. Let's get over with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, fine. Bone marrow biopsy is beyond being painful. You have to be on your stomach. Mm. And I was like 16 weeks pregnant.
Right, so not easy.
And she was like, I don't really know how to do it if you're not on your stomach. Mm-hmm. So I was like, fine. It was immense pain. It was horrible.
Did you get like an epidural for that or something?
I don't know. It was so painful. Okay. But besides that, like the minute I flipped over, I vomited everywhere because of the pressure of the baby. Just too much. I couldn't lie in my stomach at that point. I was like too pregnant. Knowing me, I like didn't tell anyone this was happening. Mm-hmm. I go back to work that afternoon, which was definitely a mistake. But like it started sinking in and she was like, we're testing you for leukemia. And I'm like, that's bad.
Right.
So it was President's Day weekend. The whole weekend, I'm like freaking out that I have leukemia and I'm pregnant. Like, what does that mean? She calls me on Monday. She's like, don't have leukemia. I still don't know what it is. So I'm like, okay.
I mean, the bone marrow is normal.
Right. And at this point, my husband's cousin is an oncologist. So we're like getting him involved, but like no one knows what's going on. So I go down to Maryland at about 18 weeks pregnant. Me and my husband take off like 2 days of work. We find childcare for all my, for my two kids at home. We spend the whole day in the NIH building, which is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I do maybe 12 vials of blood at this point. And I do a whole body, a full body MRI, because that's the only thing you could do pregnant. And then they're like, okay, wait for the oncologist. I was so sure I was fine because I'm so healthy. I call my mom. I'm like, we're going to meet with the oncologist for 5 minutes. Like, we'll come back. We'll come pick up the kids tonight. Like, no worries. We go to the room. I remember exactly the oncologist. I even know his name. And he walked in. He was like, I see in your MRI, you have metastatic lesions everywhere. And I couldn't breathe. And my husband's like, oh, like, isn't that okay? Because he's not in healthcare. He's in finance. I'm like, no, metastatic is like the worst. And he starts going through all the organs that it's already in. And I'm like sweating. I can't breathe. I know what he like. I know what this means. And I'm like freaking out. And then he explains that it's lymphoma. And there's just like cancer in my lymph nodes. I mean, I can say the parts. It's in my stomach, in my liver, in my spleen, and in the bones in my spine. And I'm like, oh, my God. So he does like a full body workup. Like he examines me and he finds them that are like by the skin. And I'm like, oh, my God, I feel that. I'm like, that's crazy.
Lumps and bumps. Right. Right. Well, tell him when he dropped that news on you. I mean, take me to that 5 minutes of time. Right. He drops it to you. Are you able to even process what he's saying at that time? I mean, he just dropped the C word on you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you're pregnant and you have kids, and take us into your headspace. Literally for those first few minutes, is he just like speaking like wah, 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 wah? Or are you listening and you're like, I mean, what is it?
So I go, I can't breathe. I have to take off my mask because I was, we were masking.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, do you totally could? So I lower mask and I just like take a few deep breaths. And like, I'm like, I kind of like asked for like clarifying, like, what does this mean? What type? Like, and then I just start like my voice cracks. So I like start crying because I'm like, holy crap. Yeah. Like and then he stops and he actually takes my hand and my husband's hands and he puts them on top of each other. And he's like, you guys need this moment to just like take this in. And I just kind of like start crying. But this is the point that my husband doesn't think it's bad. So he's like, it's okay. It's like,
I'm a husband. We're limited.
And he's not in healthcare at all.
No, but all of us are limited.
Right.
We do our best.
And I was, so that's when I was like, it spread. And I think like he turned white. Mm. And then like we took a minute and then I'm very like, let's get moved. So I was like,
what's the data?
Like, where is it? Like, are you sure? Like, what's your proof? Like,
right.
And then he like pulled up like every lesion and every size and where. And after we do the body exam, he's like, I'll be back in a few minutes.
Right.
And he leaves.
Okay.
Probably
not a terrible strategy
right.
to give you guys some time. That's actually very kind of him, not to blast you with stuff, to give you a moment to process.
Right. And we already spent like 30 minutes with him.
Yeah.
Probably 10 minutes later, somebody comes in with like a bag of lunch and I'm like, this is bad. I'm like, when they're bringing you lunch, because like you're going to be here a while.
Right. You're checking in.
I'm like, this is bad. Granted, the lunch was not edible. So like, and like, we're not hungry now.
Right, right.
My mom is calling me constantly, like, when are you leaving Maryland? Where are the kids? Like, and I'm like, I can't talk, mom. So my mom's like, what's going on? I'm like, I can't talk.
Right.
They bring in like probably 30 minutes later, like five doctors. And I'm in the healthcare world. I'm like, this is bad. Right.
They just flew in a team from Vienna. That's not good. Yeah.
And it's like all these fellows who are on this study that the NIH is having, because now I like perfectly fit this study and I like kind of prove this study right. And they go over what type of cancer they anticipate it is,
just based on the imaging and the blood test results and the bone marrow, like all the data they have this far. Because they would need to biopsy one of these lesions to know for sure. So
they explain, they can't say for sure because they need to have a biopsy. But from like the data, from my body, from like past women that have had this,
right,
this is the type of cancer they anticipate. This is the type of treatment. They do think that I could have this baby while this treatment's going on. And it's a pretty high survival rate because lymphoma is a pretty good survival rate.
Because it responds to treatment.
Right. So I then said, what stage is it at? And he said, stage 4. And I thought I died. I was like, I'm going to die. And he was like, because it's a blood cancer, stage 4 isn't the same as like a solid tumor cancer stage 4. It just means that it's spread everywhere, but it's still the same treatable. Like, it's still treatable. Like, you're not going to die from it.
Right. The stages, again, for listeners, typically are how far in your body has it spread. And so if you have a solid tumor, like you have a golf ball somewhere, and it's just confined to that golf ball, it's going to be stage 1, maybe stage 2 if it's bigger. And then if you have little marbles or golf balls in other parts of your body, that's stage 3, stage 4, and it's much, much worse. But if it's in your blood, it starts in your blood's everywhere. So there's no such thing almost. I mean, there could be a stage 1 tumor in your blood, but almost always it's going to be spread by the time you find it because that's where it is. But still, fortunately, he was saying these things tend to respond to the treatments they have.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
And then I was like, now that you diagnosed me ish, because I need my biopsy, like I live in New Jersey. Right. I have a family, like I have a job. And he was like, no, our goal isn't to treat you. It's to find this evidence. And then you can go back to New Jersey, New York and do all your everything you need to do there.
Right.
And he gives me all the paperwork and it must have been like 4 or 5 hours now. And they like, let us go.
Mm-hmm. So they did the biopsy and then let you go?
No.
Oh.
They just gave me all like the MRI, the blood work. They handed me over everything.
Oh, so someone else will do the biopsy.
And they were like, you can follow up with us or you can go back to where you live. And I was like, of course, the way back to where I live. Like, I can't move my whole family.
Right. And it's not like you live in some rural area. You're in New York, New Jersey.
Right.
You probably can't throw a rock without hitting somebody who could take care of you.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So we get in the car and it's been hours. So we text my mom and I was like, we're in the car. We'll be home in like 5 hours because that's how it was 4 hours. And then we're like, we got to eat something because it's like 5 p.m. We want to get on the road. We go eat. We start processing. We're like, we have to call people and tell them what's going on now.
Right.
So our first call was to my husband's cousin, who's an oncologist. We sent him like all the MRIs, everything. And he responded with a strong curse word and he does not curse.
Right.
And I'm like, that's bad.
Right.
Like if the oncologist is using a curse word, like, not great.
Yeah.
And then we spent the whole car ride just calling our parents, our siblings, kind of being like, this is what's going on. My parents who were watching my kids like had to leave the room and they were crying, but they're like, we don't want your kids to see it. My husband's parents were in Florida. They're like, okay, we're buying tickets. We're going to come up right away. His brother who lives in Chicago was like, we're flying in also. So everyone was like, okay, we need a rally. We need to like figure out a plan. And we also had this like 4 or 5 hour car ride, which gave us time to like be alone and process it and be like, what's our plan? Like we saw these two really young kids. Like we have a pregnancy. Like we got to figure out everything.
Right, right. At this point, again, day one, you just got the diagnosis. You're planning. Do you remember at that time, were you optimistic? Like, all right, this pregnancy is going to suck, but I'll be okay on the other end and my baby's going to be okay. Are you thinking it's game over for me or I'm going to lose the baby? Like what, again, on day one, what are you
full
thinking?
Full denial.
In terms of like, this isn't real.
Yes,
biopsy is going to be negative.
Yeah. I said, I remember calling my sister who's a doctor. And I said, they said I have cancer, but I'm telling you, it's not true.
Wow.
She's like, what else could the lesions be? And I was like, I don't know, but there's no way I have cancer.
Right.
I was like, I'm so young.
Right. And you're a social worker. So you're thinking, all right, anger's next.
Yeah. And I knew I was in denial. And I said, until that.
You're like, all right, here we go. Let's start.
Yeah.
And I was like,
until that biopsy comes in, I'm going to hold on to denial. I would be like, guys, they say I have cancer. I don't believe it. Like, that's what I told my siblings.
Wow.
Like, they're like, and everyone's like, oh, what else could it be? And I was like, no, like they're guaranteed it's cancer, but I don't have cancer. That's literally how I spoke about it.
Right. You're like, I'm going with denial. Yeah.
Totally.
Okay.
The next day was a Jewish holiday, which of Purim, which is like the happiest holiday.
Right.
And I like was putting on this brave face for my kid, but like would go to the corner and cry. And I was like seeing all these people I haven't seen in so long. And they're like, you're pregnant. And I'm like, yay, great. And like hiding everything inside. I called my best friend's husband, who is an oncologist at Mount Sinai. And I said, and he was helping me throughout this because he's a leukemia specialist. So he kind of was like in the blood work. And he was like, I'll call the surgeon. I'll get you a surgery.
for the biopsy.
So I called my friend on a Tuesday and I was scheduled to have surgery on Monday morning, mm-hmm. which is pretty quick in like the New York world. I also was like, I got to get out of New Jersey because I want to be in like a big healthcare system that I could do OB and oncology together. And I was
Not Englewood at that point. Yeah,
totally not. So I was between Mount Sinai and Columbia, but I knew this guy at Mount Sinai. Mm-hmm. So at work, everybody knew what was going on at work because they were like helping me through it. And my coworker was like, oh, there's this high risk OB that you have to see in Manhattan, which is how I'm actually part of your practice. Right. And I see your.
Right. What name is the job? Andre?
Andre or Barber.
It's always Andre. He's the goat.
So that week, I think I already had a consultation with Dr. Barber mm-hmm. on Zoom.
Yeah.
Who was so supportive and so helpful. Of course made me cry just because I was like, someone cares.
Yeah. No, he's the best. There's no one like him for these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we, yeah.
He was great.
Yeah.
And then that week, my OB from Englewood called me to break up with me.
And they would say, go see us. Yeah. Like we work with those guys all the time.
Right.
So yes.
He was just like, I can't do anything with you. And of course said stupid stuff that was like super not helpful for my spot. But I was like, oh, I already found the new OB. Like, don't worry about it. Just like transfer all the medical records.
Right.
So then Monday I go in, and I'm also working full time. So I'm still trying to like take off of days to get stuff done. So I go in for a biopsy on Monday and I'm pregnant, keep in mind.
Right.
So I can't do a regular surgery.
Right.
So first they had to get OB to clear me in the hospital before surgery. So they were like, OB was like in the OR doing the ultrasound on the baby. They couldn't do general anesthesia. They couldn't do the regular anesthesia.
I don't know if it's an anesthesia issue. Maybe normally they use some sort of like fluoroscopy or radiation. I don't know, because that would be the thing, because you can get general anesthesia when you're pregnant.
So not like the intubating one, the one that you're like...
They can't just sedate you. So they have to actually intubate you. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. So she basically said we could do local where you're fully awake.
Right.
Or we can intubate
fully asleep.
You.
Yeah.
No, fully awake.
Right. You could do either fully awake or fully asleep.
Yes.
You can't be in between.
And as a healthcare worker who works in the ICU, I was like, I'm not getting intubated if I don't need to.
So fully awake.
I was fully awake. Mm. General. So I totally wasn't in pain, but I was totally awake, conscious, like...
Yeah.
You know, they put a sheet in front of my face, kind of like when you're having a C-section.
Yeah.
OB was in the room and it ironically turned out to be a friend of mine, which was very weird. But she really like held my hand the whole time and made me get through that surgery. And after he took it out, I looked at the surgeon and I said, can I see it? Mm. I was like, I'd like to see it. Like, he like showed it to me. And then I said to him, does that look like cancer to you? And he gave me some vague answer. And I'm like, it does then, because if it didn't, you would say no.
I talk to surgeons all the time. I know what you say.
Exactly. Right. I'm like, so I go home and then my friend who's the oncologist calls me the next day and he's like, do you want me to call you with the results or like wait for the surgeon? I was like, I need to know immediately.
Right.
I need to know everything.
Right. Was your friend acting as your oncologist at the time?
Yes.
Okay.
But he informed me that once, like, we knew it was some type of lymphoma and he's a leukemia specialist.
He figured out who to send you to.
Right. So he's like, you're not going to be my patient. Also, he's like one of my best friends. So he's like, I would never be your doctor.
Right.
But, like, kind of getting me in the right.
Right. Yeah. Got it.
So he called me on a Thursday night and he's like, I have it. Are you ready? And I said, yeah. And he said, you have nodular lymphocyte predominant Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is a super rare type of Hodgkin's lymphoma. Mm-hmm. We all thought it was going to be, everyone told me it was non-Hodgkin. So he's like, it's actually Hodgkin. So it's like a little bit less of a survival rate, but it's still like in the 80 percentile. Your chemo will just be different.
Right.
And that was Thursday. And then he got me an appointment with a lymphoma specialist on Monday morning.
Mm-hmm. At Mount Sinai. Okay.
Well, during the day, my lunch break, because I was still working.
Yeah, sure.
So my husband comes up from lunch. His lunch break, my lunch break. And then my mom was like, I want to come in for this one too. And I was like, totally fine. And I'm probably like 20 weeks pregnant by now.
Yeah.
Like I'm showing, like this baby's moving already.
Yeah. How are your poor parents doing with all this? I mean, you're a parent, I'm a parent. I mean,
horrible.
The only thing worse than going through this is your kid going through this.
Right. My parents were a wreck. My mom would cry to me a few times, but she's like, I'm the mom, I have to be strong. And I'm a very strong person. So I like barely cried.
Right.
My parents had a hard time. My dad is he like finds a lot of strength in God. And he said to me, he was like questioning God. He was like, how could you do this to my child and grandchild? So like they were having a really hard time. Plus my grandparents are alive.
Oh.
They're much older. So we didn't know how to tell them. We didn't want this to like kill them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they knew I was pregnant. It was like, we didn't want it to like the news to spread in the community because we didn't know what we were dealing with. And
right.
But things were spreading. So my siblings, everybody was taking it really
things
hard.
Were spreading, meaning the news was spreading.
The news was spreading.
Right.
Because everyone's like, yeah, the news was kind of like spreading, but we didn't want it to hit my grandparents like first. And everyone was trying to rally, but we didn't know what we needed because we didn't have a plan. So we meet with the oncologist, and basically because it's Hodgkin's lymphoma, he suggested a type of chemotherapy called R-CHOP, which I have no idea what it stands for.
Okay.
It's one day, one 10-hour day, and then it lasts in your body for 3 weeks, and it's a six cycle, like you do six cycles of those.
Right. So six 10-hour days separated by 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And of course, he's like, I'll talk to your OB, see if the baby can handle this. So we spent a few days deciding, like, what's the plan? We spoke to her barber at length, and he was like, this is totally okay for the baby, and explained, like, we have to watch the baby to make sure he grows. Like, you'll be coming in at least once a week throughout this and kind of see how it goes.
Yeah, people, understandably, people think the chemotherapy is going to be horrible for the baby. Radiation is horrible for babies.
Correct.
Chemotherapy, amazingly, other than a few select ones, the babies tend to tolerate it very well, which is astounding, obviously, because like the point of it is to like kill growing cells, and what's growing in you more than a new baby. But it's just, for whatever blessed reason, for the people who have cancer in pregnancy, the chemo tends to be safe for the baby and for the mother. And we do follow certain things, but it's much more so than one might expect. Again, it is astounding that that's the case, but it just happens to be the case, fortunately.
Right. And like my craving in this pregnancy was raw fish. And when one of the OBs said, I can't have it, I was like, I'm going through chemotherapy and the baby could tolerate that. I'm going to eat raw fish.
Oh, I would have told you to have raw fish. You should just ask me.
And I did have raw fish.
I just would have said yes. So that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was like, come on, lady. Yeah. And, and she was like, as long as it's a reputable place. And I was like, I'm going through chemo. I'm having my fish.
Right. Right.
So at 22 weeks, I started my first chemotherapy. It was a few days before Passover. It was scary, of course.
Sure. Yeah.
My friends came to, like, I basically...
It's like an infusion center. You get admitted.
I go to the infusion center in Mount Sinai. I'm there from like 7:30 a.m. to like 5 or 7 p.m. It's all blood work. So you're like sitting with IVs. Of course, I was the girl who was scared of IVs before all this.
Yeah.
Now that's like my middle name. My friends came to visit. I took naps. My husband came. My parents came. And then they're like, okay, you go home and you like wait 3 weeks and like you come back.
Right.
And be ready for, and he, the oncologist prepped me for like all the side effects and stuff like that.
Right.
So that was my first round of chemo. Do you want me to go into the details of the side
Everything.
Effects?
Oh, unless you don't want to.
Yeah, yeah. The first week was, so he said that you should anticipate no appetite and a lot of nausea. I didn't have a lot of nausea because I was on a standing Zofran, which of course I called her barber and I'm like, can I take Zofran at this point?
Yes.
And I was on a ton of anti-nausea meds as well as other random medications, like a ton of steroids, better barber clear for the baby. The first week I wasn't so bad nausea. I had no appetite.
Yeah.
I literally ate one food one time and it was white rice.
Mm.
I could only eat something with no taste, no temperature, nothing. I was at my parents' for Passover. Everyone was trying to get me to eat, eat, eat. I couldn't eat. I had no interest in food.
And the food sucks.
Yes.
It's Passover.
Right. I was like, white rice and cauliflower, two things with no taste and no temperature were the only thing I could tolerate.
Yeah.
But I was otherwise doing fine. I had a five-year-old, a two-year-old. I'm playing with them. What I didn't mention is, like, part of all this is we had to address this with my kids. We're like, how are we going to tell the five-year-old? He's so insightful. He picks up on everything. And he already noticed stuff.
Yeah.
We met with his school social worker. We met with his school psychologist about, like, how do we talk to him about it? How do we deal with this? How do they address it at school also? So we were doing a lot of, like on his level also of, like, how to teach your five-year-old that mommy is really sick, but is going to be okay.
Right.
And it's like a pretty debilitating sickness.
Right.
So that was just kind of like part of it all that we also were like always stressing with my five-year-old of like, how are we going to deal with this? What are we going to talk to him about? What are his questions? So week one I got through was just, I just like really didn't eat. Week two, so I also worked at work, is that week one of chemo, I took off of work and then I went back to work on week two and three. So week two was like a lot of tiredness, but the first round I was like, okay, I didn't really eat week two, but by like week three, it was my good week. I could eat. I was totally fine. I wasn't so bad with my tiredness. So I did round two. And by now he was like, I think you should get a port, which you can probably explain more.
Yeah, it's like a, it's basically like a surgical procedure where they insert like basically access. So every time you need to get your blood drawn or every time they need to give you an IV, so they give you chemo, they don't have to stick a new needle in your arm. They have this little like port. It feels almost like a Reese's peanut butter cup size thing under the skin, and basically just poke a needle in that. So it's in the same spot. It doesn't get clogged or this, that, and it's sort of like easier for you that you don't have to keep getting these IVs and blood draws in your veins, which, you know, is quite unpleasant. And it's just also, it hurts, you know, and all these things. Right. So.
And they were having a hard time getting access during, because my chemos were so long and there were so many different. So.
And the, also the stuff that they put in is, can be painful and it's toxic. And so if you put it, the port's inserted into a bigger vein. So if you insert medications and stuff into a bigger vein, it has less side effects because it's like into a bigger lumen. Like, you know, it just, as opposed to squeezing it into a small vein and it hits the walls and it's a little more. I want to ask you one question and then we're going to pause for this part one and then finish this with part two, because your story is too good to be in one podcast. It's just going to have to be two. But you're going through this, right? So you're talking about your chemo, your emotions, your kids, you know, all this stuff. What during that time period was helpful to you, either things or people or support? Like, what was it that you found helpful? Mm-hmm. And then the second question I'm going to ask you next week, because you have to think about it for a few minutes. What are the things that were the opposite helpful?
Okay.
So first, let's go. What was helpful?
So I thought about this because as a social worker, I process this later is, you know, after my diagnosis, I start chemo. Everybody knows. And we told my grandparents and it spread. It spread through the buildings at work. It spread through my entire community, my entire synagogue. It spread. Mm-hmm. And I got many different responses. So one big one was that people didn't reach out to me. And then when they did, they were like, I didn't know what to say. I was so uncomfortable. That was the wrong response.
Right.
You should always reach out. You should always see how they're doing. But it comes in a caveat of, I noticed some people reach out so they feel better. And some people reached out to me so I could feel better. So what does that mean? Hi, how are you doing? Are you feeling okay today? They're not asking me how I'm doing. They want to know I'm doing okay so they feel better about themselves.
Right. Versus, you're like, no, I feel like shit.
Yeah. Right.
And the thanks truth for asking. Is, have a good day.
The days that I felt like awful, I didn't respond to that.
Right.
Because I'm like, they're looking for a positive answer. I can't give it to them. I'm not going to say anything. And I didn't answer that text. Versus some of my best friends were like, we're really here for you. We're really thinking about you. Like, hope you're doing okay. If you want to talk, we're here. To send a text with no need to respond is real support, because it's not about the sender. It's about the receiver.
Yeah.
One of my best friends from college, she was talking to me about it. And I was like, she's like, you need music. And I was like, great. So she made me a playlist of like our college party songs. Right. Because she's like, how can I help?
The cancer playlist.
It's called Curse Word Cancer. And that's my playlist that I listen to.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, there's so much with that. And it's true with someone who's ill. It's true with someone who's had a loss, right? There's the things that are helpful tends to be, in my experience, genuine showing of love and caring. Just saying, I'm thinking about you. I love you. I miss you. Like whatever it might be, like that, just like I'm throwing love at you. And the second thing is I'm here to help you. And not so much, what can I do to help you? Because then it's like putting, like, you have a job now to tell me what to do. Right. It's like, I'm going to do this, right? Or let me do this for you. Let me do that for you. And you could say no. You know, like, let me pick up your kid from school today. Right? You could say, no, I got it covered. But you're like, great. And so that's, it's much more, you don't put a job on the person who's suffering to like do something. You just do it or volunteer to do it as opposed to asking. Yeah. And that is amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Cool. Miriam, we're going to have you back next week for part two.
Thank you for listening to the Healthful Woman podcast. To learn more about our podcast, please visit our website at www.healthfulwoman.com. That's HealthfulWoman.com. If you have any questions about this podcast or any other topic you would like us to address, please feel free to email us at hw@healthfulwoman.com. Have a great day. The information discussed in Healthful Woman is intended for educational uses only. It does not replace medical care from your physician. Healthful Woman is meant to expand your knowledge of women's health and does not replace ongoing care from your regular physician or gynecologist. We encourage you to speak with your doctor about specific diagnoses and treatment options for an effective treatment plan.